Blog Talk Radio.
Nichi amo apura kanu apurai taitnut neye eguada metinde ojirapo kwesi ra nehem pata akan. That means greetings to all Apurakani, Apurakaitni people, meaning African black people. Today is a Guada Marketplace Day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Ra Nambata Khan, and we will be connecting with our guests shortly. Just a couple of things. For those who are in the chat room, if you want to make a comment, or if you have a question or a comment, you have to log in order to, you know, interact in the comment section. Hold on 1 second. Let me make sure I got some things together. Time. I just have to send out one quick message. And also for those who are on the phone line, you can hit the number 1, and if you want to raise your hand, so you can, if you have a question or a comment, and then we can let us know that you want to talk. We will be bringing our guests on very shortly, and we just have a couple of announcements. The first one, and we made a couple of announcements yesterday if people missed the show. Number one, August 9th, we will be in Philadelphia. We were honored to have been invited to speak at the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival. That is August 9th. It will be from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m., and we'll probably be speaking around somewhere in the middle of that festival. It's an all-day festival, 12 to 6. They'll have vendors. Cultural presentations, food vendors, clothing and artifacts and various different things, and that's August 9th. We will also be in Las Vegas on August 16th presenting on Nanasom, Apurakani, Apurakaitnit, Ancestral Religion. Look on the website, ojirapo.com, for detailed information on the flyers for those events and any upcoming events. Let's see. I see that I want to make sure for the people who are in the chat room, send me a message in the chat just to make sure the sound is working correctly. Yesterday on the show, there was some issues with Blog Talk and some people weren't able to hear. So we just want to make sure that everything is straight with that. So if you can send a message. Okay. And if somebody's for the, yeah, just, so if you can send a message and let us know if it's clear, and I'll send you a message as well. Make sure everything is going well. And we have one, there's one more situation. Something's going on with the phone line for Blog Talk, so let me check that out. We're trying to get our guest on. Okay. And for the person who, the other individual, it just looks like somebody dropped out the chat room, so if you want to refresh your browser, and let us know if you can hear. And for people on the phone line, can you just hit number 1 and raise your hand so let us know if you can hear us clearly?
And we'll see what we can get going. Okay.
So for the person in the chat, let me know if you can hear. Because we want to make sure this is working out properly. We didn't get any response yet. We saw somebody dropped out, so I don't know if they're redoing it right now. So So just send us a message right quick. And it looks like something's going on with the phone with regard to the person trying to call in. So what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do what we did yesterday. We're going to hang up and then call right back, and then we'll everything should be straight. That's what we had to do yesterday. So we're gonna do that real quick. So we'll be right back. All right, so we're back on. I want to make sure the person in the chat, can you hear clearly? Can you send me one more message? I thought you said you can hear from Chicago, but I want to make sure now that we call back in, you can hear. And on the phone lines, if you can hit the number one, if you can still hear us. The guest was having a problem getting through the Blog Talk system. So, okay, so you can hear on the phone lines. All right. Okay, and you can hear it in the chat room. All right, cool. So something was going on with that, and it happened yesterday on the show yesterday, and it happened today, so I don't know what's going on with that. We're going to have the guest call in through our phone and see how that works, and she should be calling in any minute. But just those announcements, we will be, we were talking about, we'll be in Philly and Las Vegas. Also, we just released three new books on Sunday, one dealing with our identity, showing that the origin of the term Nganga Ur connected to Amen and Amenet, Nganga Uri. There's misinformation about the origin of the term nigger. People are trying to make that divine, which is nonsense. So nigger, Naga, niggas from Ethiopia, all these different terms. We show that the actual etymological origin of these terms, they have nothing to do with the derogatory term nigger, nigga, and so forth. All in one volume, we have a book dealing with that, Any Doubtful Talking About Awareness. We also have a book, Kokobo, which talks about the documentation from ancient Kemet that we examine, proving that homosexuality, dissexuality never was accepted in ancient Kemet, because, of course, the whites in our offspring and Negroes are trying to promote that false idea to try to keep us away from our ancestral culture. So we have a whole volume dealing with that. And then we also published the soft cover version of War Means Dead. We go into detail about that information as well. Okay, so now we got reconnected back on because there was a audio issues. So now, can people in the chat room here now let us know? And for the people on the phone line, can you raise your hand once again, hit number one just so we can see? Okay, now the people in the chat room can hear now. Okay, everybody can hear now. On the phone line, if you can hit number one to raise your hand. And it's looking like what happens is somebody called in and knocked the sound out for some reason. Okay, so everybody can hear now. That's what's going on. All right, so we're just waiting for our guest to call back in. And in the meantime, we were just saying, we released the soft cover versions of our books. Let me put the links up there while we're waiting. So now we have 10 books out. They all range and $11. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Okay. I think we're back on. And okay, sister, can you hear?
Yes, I can. I can hear you very well.
Okay, you might have to speak up because you're very low.
Okay, I can hear you very well. I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. All right. Okay, yeah. Now that we're back on. All right. Okay, now. So, okay, now we got it. Again, Sister Kentake, Akoma Ntuwaso tours and products, and you were showing, okay, may not say. So you were talking about, so let's just start again. How did Akoma Ntuwaso come about? I know you wanted to show people Jamaica, touring Jamaica from an Afro-Rakani or African perspective. So how did that whole process come about?
Yes, I actually wanted to allow people to experience Jamaica, particularly from an African perspective, because our story of the Caribbean in general and Jamaica in particular is not being told. In fact, I believe it's being ignored and being neglected and being purposefully pushed aside. And that was very disturbing to me, particularly because it's a major part of my life, and that's been my whole upbringing, the way I've been raised, the community that I grew up in. Obviously, I'm African. Obviously, the people that I've been surrounded with are African. And it was very offensive to me that everything that was coming at me in terms of African literature, our story of how we have been and are being assaulted under Yoruba domination, how it's very much basically not being heard, seen, or told, the story of African resistance in Jamaica and the Caribbean by and large, including places like Barbados, Antigua, Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, Haiti. A lot of it is just hidden, and it's obviously purposeful. And then there's this whole propaganda being pushed of other many one people, one love, let's get together and feel all right, we love everybody, cracker, come here and be happy and drink up your coconut water and, you know, skip along the beach. And, you know, that's not the Jamaican culture as I know it to be. So there's a very specific and important and urgent need to express and share African Jamaican culture from the reality of those who live it, which includes myself. It obviously is not only limited to myself.
We appreciate that. In fact, one person in the chat room said, I'm so happy to hear there's an African side to Jamaica. I thought it was Jamaican Negro males chasing and pursuing and pleasing white girls and everything. So this is very important that you have this tour. And let the people know, how is the tour structured, and what are the dates of the tour, and what will you be covering when you're taking people to Jamaica in this cultural-focused tour?
Okay. Well, we're not a travel agency, so people are responsible for booking their own ticket to Jamaica, although we can assist with airlines that fly from particularly New York. There's a African-owned airline flying from New York known as Fly Jamaica, and they serve Jamaican cuisine while you are traveling to Jamaica. Right now they're flying out of Toronto, but they only have 2 flights a week. The last thing I want to be doing is flying to Jamaica and have some crackers serving me. I mean, I don't want to see a cracker as soon as I get up, you know, past the airport, past the international airport in Toronto. Once I'm up there, I don't want to see no cracker, you know. So I really am not impressed with having to fly with them. So because, you know, I'm looking for music. Sometimes I'm on Air Canada. I'm looking for music to listen to because I want to be listening to, like, some Jamaican music. I want to listen to some, you know, I particularly love jazz, you know, relaxation helps me to fall asleep. I want to listen to some Ella Fitzgerald. I want to listen to some music, you know what I'm saying? And I don't get anything like that. I want to listen to Aretha Franklin, maybe some Nina Simone. I want to listen to some music, you know what I'm saying? And I can't get none of that, you know? So I'm thinking, like, when I'm in another airline, like Caribbean Airlines, for example, when I flew with them last year, it was a really different vibe. Most of the people on the plane were African, unfortunately, speaking about my experience particularly, some of the sisters are, like, giving you attitude. You know, I mean, unfortunately, that happens when we are, you know, actually supporting our own businesses. Some of them, not that they are outrightly rude, but there's a little bit of, a, like, the energy, like, you know, because maybe the way I was dressed as well, because everywhere I go, I represent Mama Afro-Raka. So as I was going to Jamaica last year, I was with Caribbean Airlines. They are a partly African-Jamaican-owned airline and partly Burhead, Tamahu Indian, from the Caribbean, or those who were transported to the Caribbean. And when I was coming back, I flew with Air Canada. But as I said, Fly Jamaica is an airline that is flying out of New York, I believe also Miami, and those people who are located in those regions can fly to any part of the Caribbean, I believe, with Fly Jamaica. Now, in terms of Acoma Nitoasa tours, once you arrive in Jamaica, there are two airports in Jamaica. There is the Norman Manley International Airport, which is in Kingston, Jamaica, and there is another airport in Montego Bay. We do not go to the airport in Donald Sangster Airport, it is called. We do not go to the airport in Montego Bay because there's just way too much crackers there. And also, it's much further from our destination. So we don't really deal with the Montego Bay side because the Montego Bay side is very much geared towards cracker lifestyle, you know, welcoming crackers to Jamaica. Crackers and other non-Africans do not usually come off at Norman International Airport because that is the African side. Like, the side where, you know, you don't really see a lot of crackers. Like, when I'm getting off at Norman Manley, I don't see, last time I didn't see one cracker, actually.
Okay.
So, and, you know, that's the wonderful sight to see, right? So, and at the time, what I decided was that in terms of tours, some people say tours, when they hear a communist tour, so tours, they think, okay, we're going to have on be on this bus and riding through. No, we're actually taking people to what they call National Heritage Sites, NHS. If you go to the Jamaica Heritage Site on Google, Jamaica National Heritage Site, and you put that in Google right now, put in Jamaica National Heritage Site. You can also put in Bank of Jamaica. Those are two things to put in Google. You'll find websites. I think it's boj.com for Bank of Jamaica to find out the particular exchange rates right now. The dollar has dropped immensely, and we're trying to help that process by supporting the Jamaican economy. And we'll get into that later on. However, the sites in which we visit in Jamaica are particularly sites that are dedicated to the African heroes and sheroes of Jamaica. For example, Nani, Queen Nani, who was born in Ghana, and they said, okay, she was taken to Jamaica as a slave, and she was, you know, captured and sent by, you know, ship, and she was beaten and all this. But the real, our story told by the Maroons of Jamaica is that she was never carried to Jamaica. She spiritually transported, you know, herself there to help Africans in the battle against Yoruba domination in Jamaica. Because some of her relatives were taken. She said, okay, I'm not having this. I'm going up in there, you know. So the story is that Nani was killed. She was betrayed by her husband. I believe she was a co-wife. Many of the Maroons were polygamous, as a matter of fact, because that sustained the lifestyle of being able to pass on intergenerational wisdom and intergenerational culture, tradition, spirituality to each generation. So what some of the Maroons used to do is they used to go to various plantations and actually forcefully, quote-unquote, even kidnap women who did not necessarily, or maybe who did not have it in them to run away from that this type of horrific way of life that was imposed upon us by Urugu. So Nani was one, was the leader of the Windward Maroons, and she was a spiritual woman. She was a root worker. She was a priestess, and she obviously dealt with the Abathon very strongly. And they said she could return bullets to the Urugu British in the hills of Jamaica. They said she was murdered, but my very strong inclination is that she couldn't have been murdered, because if she could return bullets, how could they kill her? So the Maroons don't necessarily want to share that part of the story with us who are not living in the Maroon direct culture. Standing is that she was never murdered. She may have been captured, etc., kafa wa kafa, but she was not murdered, from my understanding.
Okay.
It is well spoken about that she transported herself back to Ghana and is still watching over the African community in Jamaica and Ghana simultaneously. She is on the $500 bill in Jamaica. Now, Jamaicans, being extremely nationalistic people, have distorted the our story of Ohema Nani and have turned her into a Jamaican heroine, even though, okay, we know that she can, we can definitely claim her as part of the Jamaican our story, but the fact of the matter is that she was not born in Jamaica. So that needs to be also overstood and taught to the children and the new generation coming forward that she was not even born in Jamaica. She spoke fluent Cree, and she was an Akan speaker. I mean, she was an Akan woman and spoke fluent Cree. Okay? So that's something that, you know, we that is part of the Akomono Tawaso Tours program and outline, that we are really interested in studying that the story of the Jamaican people, African perspective, you know. So that she's one of the sheroes that we are going to be looking into very deeply, although there's no, like, there's no burial site for her. People say, where's Nani buried? Nobody knows. They have a place in Moortown, which is where one of the Maroons, our Maroon community, and they say she's buried there, and another person says she's buried there, and then there's a place in Blue and Blue Mountains where they say there's a river that runs blood, and no, there's a whole bunch of, you know, and then there's some people who say she never existed, that she was just like a folkloric person, and just, you know, and so there's a lot of our story to be uncovered about African people in Jamaica that is not being told. Like, it was with Bob Marley, Rita Marley, and, you know, music and Peter Tosh, and but there's a lot more to Jamaican our story than meets the eye. There are three religious traditions in Jamaica in which are still being practiced today. They are Kumina, which is not syncretic. It is a pure Kikongo African religion. There is a dance step in the Kumina tradition that is called Kalunga, which is spelled K-A-L-U-N-G-A. I saw them perform last year, Kumina group, last year at the Honorable Marcus Mazaya Garvey's Earth Strong birthday celebration in St. Anne, and they were not speaking what people know as patois. Now, the terminology patois really means broken French. No one in the Caribbean speaks broken French, not even Haitians or people from Guadeloupe and Martinique, which are all colonized by the French. They speak Creole, or Haitian language, as one of my very good Haitian friends loves to remind me of. And in Jamaica, one of the things that Akomono Tawaso is instrumental in is that we teach people and make sure that people are aware that we do not speak patois. We speak Coromante.
Okay, and I want you to go into that for people who are unaware of who the Maroons are and then the Kuramanti, explain who the Maroons are and why that's important. Because a lot of people never heard of who the Maroons are in Jamaica and their key and then the Kuramanti language.
Right. Now, the Maroons is just it's just a group of people who, you know, it's very complex. Okay, the Maroons are groups of Africans who ran away from the so-called Mafa plantation system. And they created sovereign village communities within rural regions of Jamaica. Now, just because somebody says they're a Maroon does not mean that they are different from the rest of the Jamaican society. And this is part of our story that is being distorted. The Maroons, some of them live in Moortown, some of them live in Akompong. There's a place in Jamaica called Akompong, okay, which is obviously an Akan word. And it's in the parish known as St. Elizabeth. If you go to the Akomana Tawaso Tours and Products page at Facebook, please like the page. Don't take anything to like the page. You will go through the photos and you will see a map of Jamaica. And please know that the map as it is being seen, Jamaica is much bigger. Jamaica is very big. Like, to see the whole of Jamaica would take you, like, probably like a year. Like, I have, like, you know, there's parts of Jamaica that I have not seen. And when I go to Jamaica, I have to kind of stay one place because it's very, very difficult and actually expensive to move from one place to the other. Before I go on, I just want to say something in regards to the Akoma Tawaso Tours and how it operates. People think that because they see that because they see the map of Jamaica, why is the price? But if you look at the map, it's at the Akoma Tawaso Tours and Products page on Facebook, and within, I don't know what number photo it is, but there's a map. And if you look at, for example, St. Catherine, from St. Catherine to Clarendon takes an hour by public transport, or 2 hours if there's traffic. So from going from Clarendon to Portland will take you all day, and usually if you get there, if you leave in the morning, you can't really come back. If you spend the day, it's going to be hard to come back because you won't be back until the morning. So it's very far, you know? So there are places that are on the Akomana Tawaso Tours and Products outline in which we wish to visit that are literally going to take us 2 days to really see fully. So this is why cost included, it can be very time-consuming, it can be very costly, it can be very draining on the person who is responsible for transportation, those who are also, you know, Jamaica is very hot right now, we're having a drought. So, you know, these are one of the things that I wanted to express in terms of the tours, that people should not feel that because they're going or because they may be interested in going to Jamaica on a tour, that it's going to be, that we were going to see all the places that are listed at the website, which is www.akomatours.yolasite.com. And we'll spell it up later on in the evening. However, there are some places that we would not be able to see in a week's time. That's why there's a choice of 1 week. In a one-week span, we might only really get to see 3 or 4 places. Because, as I said, you know, it takes a really long time to get from one place to the other. So, in regards to the discussion about the heroes and chiros of Jamaica,
the Maroons
and the Kuramanti, the Maroons and the Kuramanti language.
Right.
Yes, the Maroons are a group of people in which, as I said, they decided to move from one place to another. For example, they were within the Mafa plantation system during the Mafa period, and Mafa being so-called transatlantic slave trade, or, you know, so-called. And they took it upon themselves to remove themselves from such a situation. However, the Maroons themselves, being that they are predominantly Akan, they came together. So the Maroons who are living in these communities known as Akompong, Moortown, and so on, are predominantly other Maroons whose story has not been told. Maybe they, you know, right now I'm doing research on my mother's district in a region known as Clarendon, and I'm coming to find out that my mother's maternal family, they are also Maroons. But they're not Maroons in the sense where they established, well, it is a sovereign community, really, like the maternal communities that I hail from. But the difference with the Maroons is that they preserved much of the Akan tradition, language, religion, food. For example, there's a meal called Dukunu in Jamaica that is the same as Ghanaian kenke. If those of you who are familiar with Ghanaian cuisine, made from fermented corn, it's actually the exact same thing. I've never had Dukunu, but I know that it's the same because I've been to Ghana and I know what kenke looks like, you know, and what it tastes like. And I've spoken to people who eat Dukunu and so forth. So the Akan people are in Ghana are the same people, the Maroons are basically, they're the same people. So the Maroons are the Akan people of Jamaica. Now the other people who are not Akan do not call themselves Maroons. They may call themselves something else, which, as I said, I'm still in the process of going through that research. Upon my next trip to Jamaica, I'm planning on going to the Spanish Town Archives, which is near the capital city of Kingston, and going through some of the documentation there, which may take me a whole day, or maybe a whole 2-3 days. I'm not sure how long. So this is one of the things that is very, very hidden, that Maroons have had a lot of exposure because the Urubu goes up in their grill and whatever, and, you know, just, you know, they're actually, some of them actually do, in like, because Caucasians give them money and other trinkets and so on to, you know, for whatever they may want. However, the Maroon, our story is a little bit traumatic in the sense that one Maroon community sold out another Maroon community and were told that in order for us to stop, you know, harassing you and leave you alone, because they were so militarily advanced, more than Urubu, you have to sell out your own people who are running away to us. So that is part of the Maroon, our story, of one of the set of Maroons on the eastern coast of the island who decided that, look, we're not going to, you know, we don't want to continue doing this, so anyone who wants to, you know, basically revolt against Yoruba domination, we're going to send you back to the Kraken. And this is where the current violent epidemic in Jamaica comes from. The Maroons who sold out their people to Urubu, they began to have children, and, you know, intergenerational passing on of the sellout culture continued. And so the sellout culture became something that was done in order to have a sense of entitlement under Urubu domination, which obviously exists globally, not only in the West, South America, and Papua Wakanda. So what took place was that the Maroons of the 1930s, 40s, 50s became the Jamaican police force. So the current people who now operate the Jamaican police force are descendants of sellout Maroons who are selling their people to Urubu. And the gangsters, or so-called guns and gunmandem and all that stuff, are the people who were on the plantation trying to run away. So the police force and the basically street gangsters, as you would call it, are at war with one another because of the traumatic our story that was never really addressed. And Urubu standing in the background and be like, oh yeah, you know, the crazy black people shooting each other up and look at those Jamaicans killing each other and so on. But in actuality, they're the ones that created this system. The worst system of police brutality probably in the Western Hemisphere is the Jamaican police force. They're probably worse than some of these cracker police that you have over here. And that's something that I would ask all those who are listening to the show today, go on YouTube and go and find out some of the atrocities that Jamaican police do to their own people. And you'd wonder if it's a crack-up. So that's why you have a lot of various. Right now there's something going on in Jamaica, the Jamaican police force. They said that they have a police killing squad that they just go around killing people, like innocent people. And they're being investigated, and the police chief of Jamaica has resigned because he was accused in the process. So the Jamaican police force is being for who they really are, and they are funded. The actual major police chief or the person who was in charge of the Jamaican police force is a British cracker. And he's the one who supplies the guns to the Jamaican police force.
I think that's
and the
very,
ammunition and everything.
That's critical because often when people hear about the Maroons, they just think about, you know, people liberating themselves from enslavement.
No.
Ones who, you know, the whites in our screen, when they're writing about them, they very often focus on that specific group of Maroons who sold out to the whites in their offspring.
Yes.
And then they begin to paint them as what the Maroons really are. And then our people start saying, why you want to identify with the ones who are more closely connected with the continent, because they sold our people out. So it's always they're always trying to misuse information. So it's good that you're bringing out those two different camps, the ones who liberated the people and the ones who were sellouts, and the ones who sellouts, their descendants,
and the ones
are now
who
the police.
And the ones who sold out were mostly based on the eastern side of the island, Portland, St. Thomas, etc., Papa Wakasa. And then what happened was that is close to Kingston. So you see a lot of the violence and so on, and the conflict and the, you know, self-hatred and the skin bleaching and, you know, crackers going down there, cracker women going down there to look for, you know, black men. It started all in Kingston, you know. And then, you know, Kingston, Montego Bay, they have an economic, obviously, an economic cooperative unit, because Kingston and Montego Bay, you know, they're both ports, you know, close to the water, so things coming in, that's where it comes from. When you talk about crackers and cracker, I just want to get this clear before we go any further. When you talk about cracker women going down for rent-a-dreads, which is actually very common, yes, in my mother's district, there was a brother, I'm not going to mention the name because I don't know who's listening, he's now deceased. But he's a brother from our district. And, you know, everybody knows each other from Scott Pass. Everybody's like, well, this is, you know, this and this. So everybody knows one another. And I don't know how. This was about 12 years ago. I don't know how it happened, because I'm one, like, when I'm in Scott Pass, I'm like, okay, this is, like, there's no crackers here. And then I heard that this fat, overweight, filthy whale of a cracker found herself in Scott Pass, of all places, hooked up with a brother from our community who's actually a close friend of our family, or was a close friend of our family, because he's now deceased. And he was a brother who lived in, like, you know, what you would consider, I don't want to say shack, because I can't stand that word. I would say like a cabin, you know, like a bed and, you know, a kerosene lamp, lantern, and, you know. And this cracker went up in there and lived up in there with this man. So packed all her bags, went, said, I'm going to country and whatever, and I don't know what happened. No one knows what happened. But a short while after, he died. And, I mean, you know, like we say back home, you make your bed, you have to lie in it. So, you know, lay down with crackers, then, you know, well, sorry. So basically, he ended up, you know, transitioning. And that's the only time I've heard of a cracker coming to the district, in that particular district. But crackers have a way to find us wherever we are, and particularly cracker females have a way to hunt brothers. Like, they don't, if the brother's on the moon, they'll go find the brother. Like, they don't play, you know what I'm saying? So I heard that they're all up in Maui. So, I mean, you know, they just, it's like crackers will go anywhere. Like, as long as we are there, they're following us, you know? So it's not a matter to say that, oh, Jamaica is, like, cracker-loving and whatever. Bob Marley is a mixed race, half a cracker, right? So the Bob Marley legacy, the Bob Marley music, made people feel that every Jamaican man loves crackers. But you have to kind of look at the situation and see, well, this man is half a cracker, and his father, Marley, is a white cracker born in Jamaica. So what, you know, you can't, not I'm saying I know there's some mixed people who do reject their Kraka lineage and the curse of having Kraka blood, which is what it is. But the fact of the matter is that this man did not, particularly Bob Marley, did not reject his Kraka blood.
Right.
And that legacy of one love was pushed by the CIA because the Rastafarian order was anti-Kraka prior to that. There's a man named Leonard Howell, which is L-E-O-N-A-R-D, first name, Howell, H-O-W-E-L-L. He's the founder of the Rastafari Nyabingi order, but it was the anti-Kraka Abibi Fahodie organizational system prior to the integration of Krakas and others. And what they were trying to do with the pushing of Bob Marley, a man named Chris Blackwell, who is now a multi-billionaire and owns much of the resource and property in Jamaica because he was the record producer for Bob Marley. And they made sure that they pushed Bob Marley more than Peter Tosh because Bob Marley is mixed. And they wanted to get rid of this concept of Rastafari being anti-colonial, anti-Yorubu, anti-integration. And they changed it. And then there was the creation of a new Rastafari order called 12 Tribes, which is basically we love everybody. There's no such thing as whatever. There's no such thing as, you know, division. We're all one and all this nonsense. But it was created in the 1960s. Prior to the 1960s, it didn't exist. White people could not pass the Nyabingi community. They couldn't get past there. The Nyabingi community in my grandmother's district, where my grandmother was born, my great-grandmother, my great-grandmother, and my mother, and there are elders there who will tell you, like, we don't deal with this beast. And I know these elders. I go up there and look for them whenever I'm in the community. So this is something I just wanted to get clear, that the Kraka obsession with Jamaica, Jamaican men, Jamaican culture, food, whatever, and African people in general, not only Jamaica, just African people in general, began with a lot with the Bob Marley invention, which is what it was. People may be offended. I'm not saying that Bob Marley was not a talented musician. Later on did not turn towards his African roots, which is why he was being used for a specific purpose. And then when they found out, okay, this African is actually beginning to turn on us, we need to get rid of this because he's not fulfilling our purpose here. So that's why they injected him with cancer and killed him. So because he decided that, pardon me?
No, I was saying that's critical because he became the face of, you know, quote-unquote Jamaican culture, reggae culture, music.
Right.
And like you said, it was all orchestrated by the whites and their offspring. Oh,
exactly. So then there are, as I was saying about the Kraka culture, the Kraka cultural habit of obsession with African culture and tradition and our obsession with trying to hijack our inheritance. The fact of the matter is that the tourism system is part of the continuation of the plantocracy, Yoruba plantocracy, as they call it, the continuation of the plantation system in Jamaica. So they need a place in which they can still, because Jamaica was a major colonial center for their enjoyment. And the concept of the buck, or the breeding buck, what they call it, which is the African man who would, like, you know, okay, like, take 20 sisters and just get at it. You know what I'm saying? And we need these babies to breed, you know, just get at it. The concept of that, very, very extremely popular in Jamaica. They would breed up a whole heap of youths in Jamaica and then send them off. So a lot of people are saying, oh, yeah, I don't have any Caribbean roots. A lot of Africans all over the world, as a matter of fact, okay, may have some connection to the Caribbean somewhere. So when African people, wherever they may be, whether it be South America, you know, Costa Wakanda was Brazil, particularly Cuba and Jamaica and Haiti as well. You know, but what they did is they started to breed up the family members and so on in Jamaica and then send them off. Because, you know, if you have 20 children, you're not going to keep all the 20 children in one place. So you keep the 20 children and you send one to Louisiana, one to Brazil, one to Haiti, one over here, one over there, and that's it, you know? So,
right.
And the unfortunate thing about it is that it's caused a lot of problems in Jamaican families because it still continues. There might be one sister that has 13 children from 9 different men or 13 children. Like I know a sister, I'm not going to name her name, but her name might be Louise, and she was, you know, someone that we knew well in the community in Montreal back in the day, and she had 19 children from 19 different men. And, you know, people are going to say, like, that's disgusting, or, you know, she's promiscuous, she's a whore, quote-unquote. But this is part of the African legacy, wherever we may be, but I find it's very, very much reinforced in Jamaican culture, you know? And so Yoruba likes that because that's something that they used to enjoy. I mean, I've read documentation on that during, you know, Yoruba holidays, Xmas and so on, they would just, you know, get a sister, like, you know, myself and her son, and ask her son to basically have sexual intercourse with his mother. And they enjoy it. You know what I mean? So the whole concept of, you know, Africans being, you know, sexually sensuous and all this business, they want to, that's their enjoyment coming to Jamaica, because that is something that is lodged within their memory of, you know, Yoruba women raping, you know, African men in Jamaica or the Caribbean or anywhere for that matter, you know, and so forth. So they have that memory, and they want to come to the Caribbean to enjoy whatever they remember that they used to enjoy, which is, you know, including homosexuality, which is something that white males are very well known to go to Jamaica for, with young boys as young as the age of 3 and 4. You know, I don't need to get into, like, details or anything because I don't want to, you know, go there. However, that's something that is seriously very much a part of the way that Jamaica is seen, but we have to understand that it's a passing down of ancestral trauma that is now is seen as part of the culture. But it's not our culture to be, you know, raped and so forth, you understand? So that's something that is very much, no matter where you go, it doesn't matter where you go. Like, when you go to Jamaica Day here in Toronto, like, there's white girls with Jamaican flags, and they're, you know, carrying on. And, like, I'm one to tell them straight up, like, don't talk like that in front of me. Like, do not talk Coromantin in front of me. Like, I don't, you might say Patois, whatever, but do not speak Coromantin. Don't do, I don't allow that. If you're going to speak to me, talk English. Do not try to talk my language to me. Now, in terms of Coromantin, the fact of the matter is there's terminologies in the Jamaican language that are instrumentally Coromantin. I don't know if I could give you one. You see, it's hard because I speak the language, and then when I'm not speaking or when I'm not there, it's hard for me to actually get, like, a word off the top of my head. But at the moment, I can't get a word. But there are just things that are said in the language that don't come from English. For example, I can't get anything right now. For example, I'll give you an example. Nine night. Nine night is a ceremony in which for the nine nights before the person is buried, you go to the family of the deceased or where the deceased had lived, and you have a celebration. You eat, you're merry, you everything. And, you know, there's food, and we kill goat. Kill goat is a terminology in Jamaican culture that is done during ceremonial times when there's birth, marriage, transition. Rum is always there. When I arrived at my grandmother's home the night that I arrived in Jamaica for the first time in 10 years, which was in March 2013. I didn't assume that I was going to be traumatized by the experience, but I was actually traumatized. And when I say traumatized, I don't mean in a like in a horrifying way, but when I say traumatized, I mean when I had left 10 years ago, my grand-aunt was alive, my grandmother was alive, and my grand-uncle was alive. And when I got there, nobody was there. The house was empty. So I'm like, okay, like, it's one thing to hear that people are not there, but then when you get there and nobody's there, then you're like, oh, wow, this is, like what's going on? So the first thing I saw, because, you know, I've been to Jamaica several times. I'm not born in Jamaica, by the way. My parents are born in Jamaica, and I am the first child of both my parents born in Canada, which is very odd and peculiar for that, too, my experience to have. But anyway, we'll get into that at another time, maybe. So when I got there, there were some men digging out my grandmother's grave and pouring rum inside. And obviously I'd never seen that before. You know, everybody thought it was normal or whatever. And I had seen this in Ghana, so I'm like, okay, am I missing something? Like, I wasn't aware that this was something that was done, you know. And they were painting my grand-aunt's tomb, and this was late at night. So I got there, I think, on the Thursday Nine Night. Now, Nine Night, to my understanding, is an Oya ritual. Because nine, and then after nine, on the 10th morning, is a funeral, whether the person was a Christian or whatever, is the funeral on the morning. There's no more Nine Nights after that, and the person is buried. And I obviously... that is an African tradition. Nana Kwabena Prempeh, one who is on Facebook and is also the founder of the Akofena Asafo of Jamaica, shared with me this week that that is a funerary rite of the Ashanti people, and it's only done for royals, but continued for several generations in Jamaica. Now, I'll tell you that it's not surprising, because I can tell you one thing for a fact, like out of like anything else, the way Jamaican people love gold, like they must be Ashanti, because these people like gold. And I used to be like, when I was small, I used to be like, what's wrong with Jamaican? Like, why are they always wearing, like, these people are always obsessed with gold. They're so materialistic. But then when I saw the Ashanti, I was like, okay. And when I started making correlations, I was like, all right now, because it makes a whole heap of sense now, you know? Because it's just like this obsession with, and people might say, oh, that's very superficial, but it really is. Like, Jamaican people be putting gold in their teeth, gold in their, everywhere. So, and I think that's it for all of us, really, you know? I mean, even when you look at hip-hop culture as well, you know, even though it's very distorted, the fact of the matter is African people in the diaspora do have an obsession with gold.
Certain groups of them, and then just the fact that the brother shared with you that was a ritual for royals, that just demonstrates it wasn't just people who were, you know, warriors or architects or physicians or mothers and children. There were royals captured in the wars, you know, Akan against Akan, Ashanti against Ashanti,
yes,
and Akwamu against
Guan,
and Akwamu against Guan, and we were captured, and some of those were royals, and they ended up on both, and that's just evidence of the fact that they continue the culture. Even with the Quartermonte, which is a name of a town in Ghana, but also in South America, amongst the people in Suriname, the Maroons in Suriname, they call their language Quartermonte, and a specific deity. They practice their tradition called Winti, which is the Akan tradition in Suriname. And when they call on the specific Akan deities, the Akan Aboson, because their Winti is similar to Vodou, they deal with deities from different groups, just like Vodou deals with, you know, Congo divinities, as well as Fon, Efe, and Igbo. The Winti tradition in South America, they're primarily Akan, but they also deal with Congo divinities and others. But when they get to the Akan Aboson, they call them the Kuramanti. So it's just a connection with all of that.
Interesting you said that, because the Suriname, the people of Suriname, the Sahamaka people of Suriname, and the Maroons and other peoples of Jamaica are able to communicate with one another. They understand one another. The video I sent you by email of the Maroon elder speaking Cree, he himself was able to communicate with people of Suriname.
Right.
So it's well known that the people, and it's interesting because I've always felt a strong connection to the people of Suriname whenever I see photos, and that's one of the next places that I'm going to try learn and develop, you know, my connection to Jamaica and the landscape and vegetation and agriculture very well. I'm heading to Suriname immediately after, and Brazil. So that is definitely one of my major projects in the future, because I really feel a very, very deep connection to the people of Suriname. And as I said, Coromantin, I tell people that I speak Coromantin, even though I myself, I recently found out that my grandmother is Aka. And I won't really share how, but I recently found that out. And it was obvious to me that she was Akan, because, I mean, you could just look at her and kind of tell, you know, but quite clear to me that she obviously is Akan. And as I said, the Coromantin language, one of the words that has come to mind is Dukunu, which is one of the meals that is prepared in Jamaica. It's not really, like, commonly prepared right now anymore. The national dish of Jamaica, which is Aki and saltfish, is Aki is actually from Ghana, well, Ghana and Ivory Coast. And various meals that, you know, people might, something they call wache in the Akan tradition, which is rice and beans, is called rice and peas in Jamaica. So it's basically the same thing. And, you know, you can see the diet. The diet of Jamaica, even though not everybody in Jamaica is Akan, the diet of Jamaica is predominantly Akan more than anything. People won't deny that, you know. Even the way funerary rites are predominantly Akan. I found that out, as I said, at my grandmother's during my grandmother's transition. So the culture is predominantly Akan. So even though someone may be in Jamaica or from Jamaica who may not be Akan, they're still practicing Akan culture. So you just, there's no way that you can't, you know. It's just not possible to not be connected to Akan culture and be Jamaican. It's just, it's inseparable. It's inseparable, excuse me. Down to the desserts, like just everything, you know. Although the attitude, like the culture is Akan, the attitude is very, I would say, I don't want to be sound like a Yoruba, but I would say Nigerian in the sense of like Yoruba, Igbo type of thing, in terms of like the fast lifestyle, like the way Jamaica, like the town, the way Jamaica is, like Kingston, Spanish Town, it's very Nigeria, because I've been to Nigeria. It's very like, you know, place that never sleeps type of thing. And then you go to the countryside, it's like Ghana, you know. So there's various facets to the culture. Now, going back into the Akomana Tawaso tours and what we are doing, we specifically look towards, as I said, the national heroes and shields of Jamaican culture. Jamaican culture. The original word for Jamaica is Yamaca, which is X-A-Y-M-A-C-A. And we basically visit sites that are dedicated to our African shields and heroes, particularly Paul Bogle, which is known as Nat Turner of Jamaican Our Story. He is Akan, absolutely, undoubtedly. He is.
Now, can you say his name again?
His name is Paul Bogle, P-A-U-L, and the last name is Bogle, which is B-O-G-L-E, and he is from Morant Bay, which is M-O-R-A-N-T. Morant, first word, Bay, B-A-Y, St. Thomas, which is in the eastern part of the island. And mind you, I'm not trying to get people to go on be on a vendetta against Maroons, but he was captured by Maroons and sent to the British governor, where he was publicly hanged. And upon that, when the British governor found out how good the Maroons were, he established like a regiment, and that's where the system of the Jamaican police force came out, because he said, wow, these people can capture some serious warriors out here. Because Paul Bogle had, you know, brought in a whole group of Africans to, this was after the Mafa, like the so-called Mafa had, you know, expired or been abolished in Jamaica, which was in 1838. However, when it was abolished, people, Africans in Jamaica still could not vote. They still could not own certain land. There was a lot of, you know, injustices. So Paul Bogle was like, look, we're not having this mess. Like, seriously. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just get to the streets and kill these graphics. So they started killing graphics, just straight up. And they could not bring down the rebellion. So what they did, you know, Yoruba sent in a whole heap of soldiers and whatever from Europe. It was really terrible for them. They could not control the situation. So they said, okay, we need to get one of, you know, we need to get some of their own people to just calm themselves, calm them down. So they sent the Maroons after him. And what the Maroons did is they stabbed him in, I think, the shoulder blade area and severed part of his arm. And he was brought to the, and there was a statue for Paul Bogle in Morant Bay, which is where we go. Where we go during the Comana tour. So tourists, during each tour site, we pour libation. That is something that we do during our sojourn to various sites. There's another African warrior named known as Sam Sharp, who was the leader of the rebellion known as the Christmas Rebellion during the so-called Xmas season. And he was from a region known as St. James, which is on the other side of the island, directly, like, it would take you about 12 hours to get from, or maybe even more than that. No, maybe about 12 hours. 12 hours to get from St. Thomas, which is Morant Bay, to St. James, Montego Bay, St. James, and there is a statue for him there in St. James. We visit that site. There's also a place called the Hanging Tree in St. Thomas, where Africans were hung from, because the lynching was very common in Jamaica, mind you, and this is something that a lot of our people don't know. Lynching of particularly black men and women was very common. That is in St. Thomas, the same area, around the same area where Paul Bogle is from. I'm just going to try to go through the sites because there's so many. There's the House Hall Great House. A great house is basically a plantation house. It's like a, you know, big house, basically, as they say in, you know, parts of the United States. Basically known as, you know, a Mafa, the house of Mafa House, as I would say it. So we visit various great houses across the island. Now, some of the tour sites of the great houses, they don't tell you the real story of what took place. It's always just a great house, you know, and it's a very nice place, and it's Jamaican history, and, you know, so we don't go with the tour guides, we just go on our own. Sometimes certain places you can't really pour libation because some of these people are very, and, you know, Jamaica's becoming increasingly Christianized. So I'm not saying that we, you know, some of these places are very public, so we don't pour libation everywhere. We go, particularly because some of these places are public and there's other people there. Mind you, there is no guarantee that when we go to these places, there will not be crackers there. I'm just being straight up. Because crackers are literally, like, swarming Jamaica right now, especially the Chinese, who are buying up various land regions. So also there is the Hall Tall Great House. There is a place called Milk River Bath, which is a mineral spring. When I say mineral spring, I mean hot water. Like hot, I don't mean hot like warm. I mean like hot boiling water. Not that it's going to burn you, but that come out of rocks and stuff like that. It was an African, so-called, quote-unquote, in which they say in Jamaica, slave, well, an enslaved African, who found this mineral spring. And it's actually quite close to the district in which my grandmother and maternal family hails from. And this African found this spring and was running away and went and bathed himself in the spring. Now, because Jamaican history is largely influenced by cracker theology, they distort a lot of things, obviously, with their cracker craziness. So what traditional elders are saying is that this particular enslaved African had some powers and was able to create this heat because he was running away. And in the process of running away, he needed a place to heal himself. And they're saying that he did some rituals to make the rocks create what he needed in order to heal himself. Understand? Because he, you know, felt or heard the dogs coming along and so on. There's various festivals that go on in Jamaica. Called, there's one called the Jerk Festival, which is the process of jerk or jerk seasoning, which is extremely, like not extremely, but very hot, like spicy seasoning with different ingredients. There's a process in which was created by Africans. They say Maroons, but just Africans, enslaved Africans who ran away, who wanted to find a way of curing meat and preserving it and making it taste, make it have taste without, you know, they don't have seasonings to be running around with. Like, they're running away, you know what I'm saying? So they just pick different things and crush it up, and that's how jerk seasoning became popular, which also the jerk seasoning that they say they call jerk in Jamaica is actually what they call, what do they call it in Ghana? They call it shito. Those of you who are familiar with Ghanaian cuisine, it's a crushed up pepper. They crush up peppers and shrimps and other things, and they eat it with kenke. But the difference is that in Jamaica, there's no shrimps in it. But it tastes basically the same. The only difference is that there's no shrimps in the jerk seasoning. The jerk seasoning and the shito is basically the same thing, almost. But, you know, so that's another other thing that we do to various cultural festivals that have to do with authentic African-Jamaican culture, in which the Kumina groups will be singing and dancing and showcasing the language that they still speak today. As well, there are many other African heroes and heroes, such as Miss Lou Bennett, which is Louise Bennett Coverley. She is not an, was never an enslaved African. She was born in, I don't even know exactly, I think she was born in like the 50s or 60s. And she's basically an ambassador of African-Jamaican culture who made it so that Africans in Jamaica would be proud, those who are immigrants, would be proud to speak Coromantan, because when they were immigrating, they were being told, you know, speak properly, don't talk like this. As my mother, you know, tells me when she was at Canadian immigration, like, some of the women would tell her, you know, you don't talk properly. Like, when you, like, you're in Canada now. Like, you need to, like, talk normal. Like, stop this, you know, may I go on mission. Stop this talking, you know. So this is something that Jamaicans who were coming here and all Caribbean nationals who were coming here were told to stop talking like you are, stop talking like that. Like, talk properly, you know. So that is something that Miss Lou was very effective in teaching the African Jamaican community and Caribbean people in general that we must be proud of our language. And she also taught where the language came from. She said, people say, oh, the language is this, the language is that, the language is Spanish. We said the language is African. So she's basically an African ambassador, teaching a lot about the African-Jamaican culture, inheritance, oral tradition. This is something that she was very instrumental in. She has transitioned. There was Olive Lewin, who was a poet and orator and also an African-Jamaican ambassador. I'm researching various sites and researching where she's buried, etc., Tapalacasa. And these are just various people in which we will be visiting there. A lot of their pictures are at the website, and their pictures are also at the Akomina Tawessel Tours page.
I had a quick question for you, and we did post the link, the Akoma Ntuwaso Tours page on Facebook, and then we also have posted the link for your actual site,
yes.
The Akoma Tours .yolasite.com.
Oh, yes, about dates. I'm going to get into that after when you're done.
Okay, and then I had a quick question, but then there's also somebody on the phone line. I think they have a question as well. But my question quickly was, is this So the tour you're doing, is it unique? Do you know of any other tours that are similar? Because yours seems unique with regard to bringing people into a deeper knowledge of the true story of Jamaica and then also dealing with the spirituality.
Yeah, well, it's not cracker friendly. We don't tolerate homosexuality, bestiality, any form of cracker, you know, behavior, drug use, Katha Wakatha. Those who are married to crackers leave them at home. And basically, I'm not going to say that I'm the only person, but I am going to say that I don't know of anyone else. And I am going to put the word out that Akomene Tawaso is open to partnering with Africans globally, those who are of, you know, Jamaican heritage, those who are Africans, period. So I just want to make it clear that we're not saying that, oh, you know, we only deal with Jamaicans, and if you're not Jamaican, well, we don't want to hear from you. And what I would suggest for those who want to partner with Akomene Tawaso, please, it would be very beneficial to visit Jamaica before, you know, seeking partnership with us, because you have to understand the culture very well and know, you know, basic things about the culture. When I say partnering, I mean that those who are interested in investing in land, because we are interested in various projects for the future, including opening a natural health center and also a school, independent school, and also a library, which is our first incentive. So right now we are looking towards purchasing land, and those who are interested would also be, you know, encouraged to partner with us in order to do so and become, you know, and contribute to the library, the shaping of the library and so forth, because the children in the community in particular are not, like, exposed to African, Caribbean culture, like, period, you know, because when I look at New Orleans and a lot of the traditions and so forth and the food and, you know, I'm not, you know, totally familiar, but gumbo and, like, I'm like, okay, like, straight up, this is like the Caribbean, you know. So before Katrina, I was planning to, like, go, not, like, right away, but I was, it was part of my plan to, like, go in the next 3 weeks, because I was like, no, I used to just watch videos, you know. Sometimes you're just on YouTube and you're like, I'm not going to be on any period, internet period, looking at no cracker, so I'm always interested in my people, you know. And I was really interested in the way that I saw people from the New Orleans, the way that they express themselves through music, the movements, just, like, the way that they do things. I was like, these people remind me of, like, my uncles, you know. So, you know, I was really interested in how similar the culture was. And then I was like, you know what, let me just, you know, like, seeing some of the marching bands, the way that, just seeing some of the, like, the mannerisms and the movements, and I'm like, no, man, like, these people are, like, these are my people, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, so I was really interested in, you know, making that connection. So that's something that, and I know that people from that region are actually Haitian, and, you know, or there's a strong Haitian connection as well. And I've studied some things on their level, who was the Vodun priestess of that particular region as well. So, you know, the connections are becoming stronger. One of the things that is very important to me in terms of African Jamaican culture is my own self-discovery in terms of my family inheritance, like, not, you know, finding out who my great-great-grandmother was, because we're not able to go that far. Like, I know my great-grandmother, but I've asked, like, every family member that's currently alive about my great-great-grandmother, and nobody knows. But what I have found out is that somewhere down the line, somebody in my family, which I believe my great-grandmother talks about being in Brazil. I don't know. My great-grandmother talks about her mother telling her about Brazil. So that means that my people were not always in Jamaica, that they were probably in Brazil. And the interesting thing is that I've always had a connection to Brazil. Like, I've had this obsession with Brazil, you know, like Candomblé, and just, not obsession, but just this, you know, and that's why I listen to my spirit. Anything that I sense strongly is telling me that these people well, we're all family, but it's telling me that I have some literal bloodline there, you know? And
right.
That's something that I think that Odurafo was very instrumental in as an organization, and yourself as a brother in our community. You really need to listen to your spirit, because my spirit leads me to New Orleans, Mississippi, Brazil, Suriname, Jamaica, Ghana, Congo, and I'm like, okay, Zimbabwe, you know, Uganda, you know, things like that. When I see pictures from these places, I'm like, okay, like I've been here before, you know? So, and it's interesting because I didn't know that about Brazil until about 6 months ago. So right now I'm looking into, okay, you know, where? Like, where is this Brazil connection? And like, I'm not getting it right away because I, you know, it's just, it's, I don't know. But the fact is Brazil has come up. So the whole point of Jamaica, like, we are, obviously we're not always in Jamaica. It's quite evident right now. So I'm just saying that for the listeners to think that, okay, you might be from, your family might be just, might have been in Detroit for the last, you know, Virginia or whatever. But I don't mean that you come, it doesn't mean that your people have always been there. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they've always been there. You know, so it's someone, somewhere, we're not sure, was in Brazil or was coming from Brazil somehow. And obviously they're African, so. That is something that came through. So
I want to grab this caller right quick. This particular caller, I think they it looks like they have their hand up.
Yes.
1 second.
Who's
Joe Wo? For you, you have a question or comment? Number 7054.
Otev, sister and brother, I got really a comment. I came on. I really started. I came on a little late, like around 9:30, and I was listening, and I think kind of one and two. The sister was discussing about the Maroon communities in Jamaica, and. You know, and she just mentioned about listening to your spirit, and I agree with that 100% because it just probably like a few months back, my spirit had led me to study or research Maroon communities in South Carolina, and coming to find out there were several Maroon communities in South Carolina, where I reside. I'm a part of the Gigichi Gala Nation, and, you know, and she was also talking about language, and, you know, you got Gala Ngichi, and, you know, Gala is as actual language, and, you know, sometimes when I didn't realize I had an accent until I'm 32 now. I didn't realize I had an accent until I was 16 when I left.
Yeah, you know, you have a Caribbean accent.
Yeah, I didn't realize
I thought,
that.
Like when you called in, I thought you were from the Caribbean. Yeah, you have a Caribbean accent.
I'm
and the Gula people came.
I'm born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina. And you know, when you come down here, everybody basically sounds like and even some of, like you were mentioning about food. Even some of the food that we eat, one of the most popular dishes, you know. In my own town is okra soup. You know what I mean? I think in New Orleans they probably call it gumbo, but we call it okra soup down our way, you know what I mean? And, So I think the ancestors is just connecting us, and we reconnecting and that maroon blood, you know what I mean, that rebellious blood, you know, that desire to be free, you know what I mean? And I think everything is just coming full circle, so I wanted to mention that, you know what I mean? There's a little saying that I recommend that the brother and the sister familiarize themselves with something named Queen Quet, who's doing some phenomenal
work. Yes, I'm familiar with her, I'm very familiar with her.
For sure, for sure. And, I really won't comment on that.
Actually, she has some of the history of the Gullah Geechee, and she says that they have a strong connection to Barbados. And when I hear her speak, I mean, I was partly raised by Barbadians in the sense that, you know, my mother, when she would, you know, go to work, I mean, she would leave me with Barbadian, my Barbadian aunts and so forth. And she sounds like she's, I mean, when she opens her, I've seen YouTube videos with her, and when she opens her mouth, she sounds like she's from Barbados. So I was shocked because I thought she was, like, she sounds like she's from Barbados. So there's a story of the Gullah Geechee somewhere. I don't know, like, what the whole history, I don't know, like, enough of the history to quote it, but there's a story of them having some transition from Africa via Barbados to where they currently are now in South Carolina.
For sure. It's Gullah Geechee, G-U-L-L-A. You know, it's Gullah Geechee, and Gullah, you know, an official language, you know what I mean? Geechee's dialect of the Gullah language, you know what I mean? But, you know, I just want to comment on that right there, you know, and I want to comment on, you know, the betrayal that freedom-loving African people always seem to encounter, you know what I mean, amongst our own kind. And I think that's something that we got to be mindful of, and just as well as that warrior blood that is transferred, that is, you know, it's being transferred generation to generation, that other bloodline still being transferred as well. I just want to comment on that, and I mean, hope, you know, that we sharing my part of our story, you know, our true story, how, you know what I mean, and encourage, you know, the both of y'all to continue with y'all work, and, you know what I mean, just keep on moving forward, man, because everything for real, you know, because I was spiritually led to study. My ancestors, they, you know, go do some research on the Maroon, and I didn't realize there were so many different independent Maroon communities in the South Carolina area, you know what I mean? I didn't go anywhere else, but I just dealt with the South Carolina area, and, you know, it's hard, and having that blood, you know, having that heritage and that tradition, it made me more sense why I don't really mesh well with other African people sometimes, because they seem to understand my nature, you know, so. But,
exactly.
But everything is everything, man. I just, you know, I'm just excited. Just want to encourage the brother and the sister keep on moving forward, and I just want to make that comment, you know what I mean, and that's basically what I wanted to say, you know.
Asante Sana for calling me. I really appreciate that.
Yes, may I say, and we do, we're going to have some information coming up on the shows, you know, dealing with, you know, our presence in various communities, and just like in Jamaica, Caribbean. When the brother mentioned Queen Quet, Gullah Geechee Nation, you can look that up online. She's the head on the body. She's the queen mother of Gullah Geechee Nation, the head of state for her advocacy organization, and she promotes Gullah Geechee culture heavily, trying to get people to, you know, return to their roots and embrace their culture and so forth. So we're going to have information coming up on that, because we want to, just like the brothers started investigating, you know, Maroon communities in South Carolina, things like with your Akoma Ntuaso tours, when people hear the information, even the people who are in different states or far away or whatever, just when they hear you talk about that, hear you talk about the culture, that inspires people to say, well, wait a minute, let me start investigating my culture where I am, and they'll start investigating Maroon communities in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia, and, you know.
Or even if it's not where you are, investigate where your grandmother was born, or, you know, you heard your great-grandmother was from here, or because some of us are in major cities, you know what I mean? Like myself, I'm in a major city in Canada. I mean, I'm not, you know, so I'm investigating my ancestral heritage via where my parents are born. And so investigate where your grandmother's from, you know, where your, you know what I mean? Like where your mother was born, because that doesn't mean that because you are in, you know, New York or you know, Maryland or whatever, that, you know, your people are not somewhere else. You feel me?
Right. Or even they'll find, like in New York, one of the first, you know, major revolts, so-called resistance movements in New York. They call it the 1712 Rebellion. And, you know, they waged war against the whites in the offspring. And when they caught, it was about 21 of them they caught. They said 9 of them had Akan Day names. So the Akan were waging war early on once we got over here. So,
you know, everywhere.
Right. So that just, you know, what you're doing stimulates people to say, hey, I'm going to look in my own blood circle. And then numerous stories, just the basic lines that people tell us, the handful of people they talk about and want us to focus on in, quote-unquote, African history, African-American history, African-Caribbean history. Everybody needs to start looking in their blood circles and the people connected to them.
Definitely.
We'll start unearthing numerous, you know, facets of our true story. And there are hundreds, thousands of maroon stories that have never been told. And I think what you're doing stimulates people to start moving in that direction. So we want to remind people again. Now, the dates. What are the dates of the...
Okay, well, I'm going to do this in two forms. The original dates were August 6th to 20th, and I did not get much response because I was trying to promote it in small circles of people. I'm not trying to attract Negropean scholars or Negropean anything. You know what I'm saying? Huh. Definitely not crackers. So, in fact, the dates have been changed. Right now, I may be going to Jamaica next month if the tours do not proceed with any form of interest. If no form of interest is expressed, then there will not be a tour in August, obviously. But so far, the tours are scheduled to begin on the 21st of August until the 28th for 1 week, because it's too late to do a two-week tour, and two-week tour takes a lot of resources and energy. So right now, a one-week tour for the 21st to the 28th. However, we will only proceed with 3 guests, because if it's less than 3, it's like, okay, it can't be a tour with one person, you feel me? So if 3 people express interest and I get emails from, you know, more than one person indicating interest in attending, then for sure the tours will go on. The date for the registration is August 3rd. The time limit is 7 p.m. because I need to be able to contact Jamaica in order to inform them, because there's people on the other side waiting, okay, you know, is this going to go down or is it not going to go down? And then we have another tour commencing December 28th to January 6th. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. December 23rd to January 6th.
Okay. So now what is what's the best way they can get in contact with you?
The best way to get in contact with me is via email, which is at akomatours, A-K-O-M-A, tours, T-O-U-R-S, at gmail.com. We are also having a book drive for the children in the communities of rural Clarendon and Manchester. We're asking for books, toys, toy cars. I have a request for a walkie-talkie dolly, which is a walking, talking African doll that exists somewhere in the world, most likely in the United States, because I haven't seen it in Canada. Please send it over, or send it, if it's a doll, toys, cars, please send it to Canada, Toronto, Canada, and I will provide a mailing address for delivery. If it is books, I will provide the mailing address in Jamaica. And if it is any form of African clothing, I would definitely most likely suggest Toronto, and then it would be sent to Jamaica as well, because there's a barrel going down in December, actually a container going down in December. So we're just, you know, getting stuff together to just send stuff down. And there are also opportunities in terms of interest in bulk distribution of herbs from Jamaica. If you're interested in a list of the herbs we have available, we do 5, most likely 5 10-pound delivery. Those who are on the tours will be receiving smaller packs of herbal teas for distribution and sale. And obviously during the tours, meals are included, pick up and drop off at the airport, and there are various fruits, like tropical fruits that any of us, including myself, that I've never really tasted before. So we have an opportunity to also get exposed to the authentic African diet, which is, when I say authentic, I don't mean that specifically cooked foods. I mean, you know, raw foods, you know, like various fruits that most people have never had exposure to before. And most of the fruits of Jamaica do also grow in West Africa, particularly West and Central Africa. And for August 21st, the pickup is at Norman Manley International Airport, and you are dropped off on August 28th at Norman Manley International Airport, as well as for the dates on the 23rd and the 6th of January. If you are looking for prices for the tours, please visit acomatours.eulasite.com. Now, accommodation, I'm going to be very brief in regards to that, is at Lobo.
Can you just spell that for the people who are on the phone, acomatours.yolasite.com?
Oh, yes, Acoma, A-K-O-M-A, Tours, T-O-U-R-S, one word, Yolasite, Y-O-L-A-S-I-T-E.com.
Okay.
In terms of any form of donations, monetary, etc., Kafa Wakafa, I would suggest www.umkhonpowesizwe.wordpress.com. That is my personal blog page, which is dedicated to African children all over the world and the education and rise of the African family. Various things, sometimes just personal venting. You know, it was actually began as my homeschooling project, and it is still up and running. So if anyone has interest in any form of reaching out to me personally, you can do that at my blog page as well, or any donations can be sent via my blog page. We have a group of children in the region of Scott Pass, Clarendon, that they're not really aware of Acomatours, because Acomatours is fairly new. We actually began last year. It was inspired by Acomatours was inspired by my communication with my grandmother. She sent me a few messages, and she didn't actually tell me, okay, Acomatours, but she said a few things to me that inspired Acomatours. And I know that it's something that she is very instrumental in. I really believe she is really the founder. I'm just the instrument in which the vision is being implemented. But the real founder of Akoma Ntowasa Tours is my departed grandmother. And that's honestly a fact. And also her sister, they used to fight in life, but in spirit I'm sure they're not fighting anymore. At least I hope not. At least in the way they did in life. So basically, that's something that I really honestly have come to accept, that is something Akoma Ntowasa Tours is embracing of African culture, period, in particular in Jamaica, in which, you know, my grandmother wants me to recognize that, you know, Scott Pass and rural lifestyle is something that is part of my ancestral calling, ancestral inheritance. So something that is, like I said, is very instrumental in the shaping of this vision. So the Lober's Guest House and Bar, it's a guest house. Guest house in Jamaica means hotel, or, you know, it's a Jamaican way of saying hotel, basically. And it's located not too far from Scott Pass in a small district, again, rural district called Whitney Turn. And they are an African-owned, black-owned hotel. The owner is actually based in New York. And if you go to Facebook, you will see Lober's, L-O-B-E-R, S, apostrophe after the S, Guest House, G H-O-U-S-E, separate word, H-O-U-S-E, and bar, B-A-R. And the picture of the hotel is at my Apartment Tawaso tourist page as well. Please go through the photos. I really would like more interaction from the community in terms of the photos, just getting people to comment and engage in discussion, ask questions, you know, whether you like the photos, whether you don't like it, what are you curious about, do you know these fruits, have you seen these fruits before from Jamaica, what do you know, have you eaten Jamaican food, wherever you may be, what has your experience been with African people from Jamaica, negative, positive, whatever it may be. So Lober's Guest House and Bar, please, you know, be mindful of some of the photos. They're a little bit, you know, questionable, to say the least. Some people do post on the page who are not associated with the guest house. And they have wonderful rooms, child-friendly, family-friendly rooms, a dining area, and meal, breakfast is included. They have a bar area for people who, you know, like their wine and so forth. But they have a festive area where, you know, parties, late-night parties are kept. There is security as well. And this is where our guests will be staying. We usually don't take more than 10 guests at a time with a Akome Tawaso tour. So it's a very intimate group. We don't do more than 10. If there's 10 and children, then that's different. There are special rates for children because we're not going to charge the same price for our children 8 to 13. Children aged 8 to 13 are a special rate. Children under 8 are a special rate as well. And children who are under 1 are also a special rate. And there's also a special rate for pregnant women as well. So, for expecting families. Basically, Lober's Guest House and Bar is the hotel in which our guests will be staying. We are also affiliated with another hotel in which I'm supposed to be meeting with them in September, so I'm not giving out any information at this time. But there is another hotel that we will be staying with in the future in case we will be, hopefully next year we will be, which is 2015, or Yorubu 2015, we will be basically working with another hotel, African-owned hotel. So the hotels we deal with are African. Everyone who is affiliated or everyone who is an employee of Akome Tawaso Tours is African, Jamaican, one of them being a family member, a cousin of my grandmother's brother's son is the person who is responsible for Akome Tawaso Tours in Jamaica when I am not present in Jamaica. And we have our driver, Ras Aital, who is a Nyabingi Rasta and very familiar with African traditions. And we have farmers who are affiliated with the collective. And it's a very, very small group of 3 Africans in Jamaica. And then the hotel, which is not affiliated with us directly. We are just dealing with them because, you know, obviously our guests need somewhere to stay, but they are not. The hotel, the Lober's Guest House and Bar, are not with Akome Tours. They are affiliates of Akome Tours. Okay? All in transactions that are done in Jamaica are done in Jamaican currency. We do not use, you know, American dollars in Jamaica while we are present in Jamaica. We use Jamaican dollars. If you want to become familiar with Jamaican money and the banknotes, please go to www.bankofjamaica.com, BOJ.com. And I believe that the prices, as I said, are at the website. There's a picture on the Contact Us page of Paul Bogle on the banknote, Queen Nanny on the banknote. The Paul Bogle banknote does no longer exist, that particular banknote. And on the side, there's a picture of Bukman, the leader of the Bwakaima Revolution in Haiti, who was born in Jamaica and transported to Haiti during the Mafa period. Also, we were planning on starting on August 6th because August 6th is so-called African Independence Day or Independence Day in Jamaica. And there are various festivals that take place on that day, including the Denby Agricultural Showground, which is an agricultural showground that takes place in the interior of Jamaica in the district known as Clarendon, in the parish or I would say, like, city then, or not city, like, Maypen would be, like, Maryland, and then you have different, like regions in Maryland. But Maypen is as big as, it's considered, like, a state then. They just say parish because, I don't know, it's very, like, the naming of the regions are very British. So, I mean, that's just, you know. And then Denby is, like, an agricultural showground where, you know, they bring out various agricultural things from Jamaica, like different plants, herbs that are used. There's different shows taking place. There's dances. There's various sound systems with music, reggae music, etc. Capital Casa. There's food on sale. They have horses. It's basically like a live farm. 2 days. It's August 5th and 6th. So I started on August 6th because when we arrive, when, you know, everyone would arrive, it would be a great day to go down. And then, you know, there's a show afterwards in the center city in Maypen. So, I mean, on August 6th, the night never sleeps. Like, people usually, last year when I was in Jamaica, I got in at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning. So you don't usually sleep on August 6th, right? I mean, you know, unless you really, you know, most people don't really, like, most people just stay up all night, you know. So during the December tours, there will be various drinks on sale that are part of the culinary tradition of the Caribbean period, not only Jamaica, such as Sara, which is called Bissap in Senegal and Gambia. It's the exact same drink. The only difference is that in Gambia and Senegal, for whatever reason, I don't know why, those of us in the diaspora, like, I don't know if it's a Kool-Aid tradition or whatever, but we just pour too much sugar and everything. So, like, we over-sweeten stuff. I mean, it doesn't matter where we come from, the diaspora. We just over-sweeten a lot of things. So Saro in the Caribbean is way too sweet. In West Africa, it's still medicinal. Even though it's sweet, they sweeten it only to the level that it needs to be sweetened. Like in places like Trinidad, Barbados, and Antigua, and St. Kitts, and even Jamaica. Like, they over-sweeten Saro to the point where it becomes like syrup. You know what I'm saying? It's not supposed to taste like that, right? So if you taste it from a Senegalese person and then from a care person from the Caribbean, it will taste the same. But it is the same thing. The only difference is that we oversweeten it. And there's another drink called Mabi, which is... Pardon me?
I just wanted to say, the brother just reminded me, I didn't even realize. It's only 4 minutes, a little bit over 3 minutes left on the live stream.
Okay. Well, if anyone has any questions, I would love any questions at this time. Or any comments or suggestions, or if anyone wants to contact me again, Kentucky Malapenza. Email address is akomatours@gmail.com, A-K-O-M-A, tours, T-O-U-R-S, @gmail.com. If you want to contact Akoma Natoso Tours directly during the tour period, we can be reached at 1-876-390-3175 in Jamaica. Ask to speak to Kandal Morgan or 1-876-871-2792, and you ask to speak to Kandal Morgan. If you're, you know, just decide, hey, I just want to come to Jamaica and, you know, just for a little while and I just want to chill out or whatever, and you don't have anyone to pick you up, you can contact Kandal Morgan at, again, 1-876-390-3175. And if it is any period outside of the Akoma Natoso Tours, we are also able to accommodate you outside of the Akoma Natoso Tours, although there is a different package rate for that period. So if people just want to go to Jamaica individually, we also have individualized packages as well, in which you can stay at Lobo's Guest House and so forth during that time. So I want to let you all know, Madasi, for listening into the show. And Madasi Pa, Brother Odorafo, for having me.
Awesome. Yeni, I say that. We really appreciate you coming on. I know people learned a lot about aspects of Jamaican true story that, you know, we didn't know about. And this, I believe, I realize that once you get down there and you're able to start reintroducing people to their own ancestral culture, that's going to be the revolutionary and resolutionary piece that stimulates the younger people down there, as well as some of the older people down there, to start changing their conditions and overthrowing that perverse police force and putting some real people there and getting things back to normal. and it's going to be through that cultural restoration, which you're a key component of that. So we really appreciate you, Yerase, for coming on.
Yerase,
and we will talk to you soon. And for those who are still online, we just had a couple of announcements. You can call in 657-383-0635 in the next 30 seconds. But we just had a few announcements for those who came on late. For sticking with us through the technical difficulties we had for the first few minutes of the show. But we just want to let everybody know that again, we will be in Philly on August 9th. We will also be in Las Vegas August 16th. And our fundraiser, that we're raising funds, is still going on. So go to our Homa page on ojirafo.com, the website. We just released 3 new books on Sunday. And we went over some of the information dealing with those books, but we just released 3 on Sunday. The More Means Dead softcover version is out, which is with a new appendix that didn't exist in the original version. Coco Ba, which is the collection of articles, publications, all in one volume, proving that dissexuality, homosexuality, was never accepted in ancient Kemet. And then we also have the Eni Daho, which means awareness, the collection of articles going into the cosmology of ancient Kemet and showing that the terms that many people try to mistranslate as the origin of the word nigga, naga, negro, nigger, and trying to make that divine, pure nonsense. So we go into the etymological origin of negus and naga and negro and so forth and show where these terms come from and show that these, you know, the term negro, nigger, nigga, however you want to pronounce it, has nothing to do with divinity at all. But we go into the cosmology and show what our actual identity is. So we released those 3 soft cover publications a few days ago on Sunday, that makes in total 10 soft cover publications that we have. They all range from $8 to $11. That's the price range for all 10. We have those. We also have the program for those who would like to be distributors of our soft cover publications. You can buy them wholesale, and then, of course, you can sell them retail to generate revenue for yourself as an independent contractor, as an entrepreneur. But that's all part of our fundraiser. We are raising funds to print out more books so that we can, when we go to our presentations in the various cities, we give away at least one copy of our book to every person who attends our event. Our events are free. Attendees to our events are not charged an admissions fee to come to our workshops, trainings, presentations. We teach ancestral wisdom, and we do not charge people to come in and hear that and learn that. And we also give away at least one free book. So in order to be able to do that, we have a fundraiser to generate those funds. You can make a donation, but if you make a donation of $15 or more, we're going to send you a soft cover book anyway. So you can go to the website now, ojirafo.com/nhoma.html. So that's Ojirafo, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com/nhoma, N-H-O-M-A. .html, that's the Nhoma page on the website, and you can get to that link as well. Just go into the website, the index page of the website. You'll see all of our publications. On the publications page is the links to the PDF versions. Of course, you can purchase the soft cover version. The information about the distribution fee. There's also a video talking about how you can become a distributor, and you can watch that video as well. You can also make a donation on that page, and this is what helps us to be able to do these presentations for free, give away the free books, as well as all the books that we have, including the 60-plus articles and the 49 videos. All of those in the PDF versions are free downloads anyway, so this helps us to continue to give away this free information, to have these shows twice a week, to maintain our websites and so forth. So we have this ongoing fundraiser to fund these activities so we can serve the Afurakani, Afurakani community, give free information out that's actually accurate. And there's a lot of people who are out here teaching information about our culture, cosmology, history, ancestral religion, which is inaccurate. And then they're charging people. So not only are they charging people to get in, then they're charging people for their books and DVDs, but the information is not correct. So what we're doing is we're not charging people, and we're giving away at least one free book, and the information is actually sound. So in order to continue to do that, we don't receive funding from any other source. Our sole funding is the support of the community, and this is one reason we put the soft covers out, so that we can, you know, people pay for those, give a donation, but also just purchase the soft covers, and we can get that information out as well as fund our activity. If you have any questions with regard to that, you can give us a call at 202-717-0050. If you would like for us to come to your area, you can contact us again at 202-717-0050. We can organize that. We don't charge a speaker's fee to do a presentation in your city. The only cost that organizers would have to bear is travel expenses. And if there's a cost for a venue, then a cost for a venue. But very often, there are certain places where you can find where you won't be charged for a cost for a venue. It can be a community center, or it can be a specific black-owned business. You know, and very often things can be worked out in that regard, so you may not even have to cover any cost for a venue at all. So if you're interested in us coming out to teach Nana Song, Afurakani, Afurakaiti, and Ancestral Religion, speak on any one of our 15 books or 60 publications, articles, you can contact us, 202-717-0050. But for those who have been thinking about distribution or appreciate the work and value the work, go to our website now, ojidafo.com, and look into purchasing one or more of our soft cover publications. We will be back on next week on Tuesday, Abenada, for Ojida purification, and then the following day, Akuada, Wednesday, for Egua Marketplace, and we Yerase, we thank you for tuning in, for sticking with us through the technical difficulties, and we also ask that you share our information. We also have, of course, our Ning site, which is a social media network that we own, private network, apuraka-apurakaet.ning.com, N-I-N-G.com. There you can create a profile, post messages, pictures, videos, information exchange information. People are studying the same kind of information. There's a discussion forum. It's been around for a few years, so there are, you know, thousands of posts out there talking about various aspects of ancestral religion, culture, and nation building restoration. So you can join that site. We also have our Facebook group, Akanfo Nanasong, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion, on Facebook. Our personal page on Facebook is afuraka.afuraetkaet on Facebook. We also have a page on Facebook, a different page called Gorilla Scene, and we also have a Ning site, gorillascene.ning.com, gorilla and the word S-C-E-N-E, gorillascene.ning.com. That has to do with ancestral hip-hop, ancestral spoken word, ancestral soul music. We want to promote artists who embrace the culture, embrace Afurakani, Afurakaiti, ancestral culture, embrace Maranechi, divine law and divine hate, and weave that kind of consciousness into their music so that we can have people promoting the culture and through our artistic expression. So we have that page linked to our Facebook page, but then we also have a separate Ning site, gorillascene.ning.com. You can join that site as well if you know of any artists, conscious artists, or people who are just artists who are ready to study and incorporate some consciousness, they can go to the site, they can start studying, and of course, once they begin to study, their art will reflect within their consciousness what they've newly acquired and incorporated in their consciousness. So, there we go. And, all right. So, may I say again, anybody has any questions, email us, call us, 202-717-0050. May I say for all those who have purchased our books and for those who will be purchasing, and we look forward to connecting with you very soon. Yeah, I think.